Maybe our hearts and minds are a little bit full. Again, if you need to stand up and walk around, feel free. In the south of the equator, we do things a little bit backwards. Sometimes we joke that we drink coffee so we can sleep well at night. Coffee is part of the culture. So if you need to, but up here, we're north of the border, so north of the equator, so you can drink it to stay awake. I'd like to continue where we left off in 1 Peter 5 with the thought of the theme, Faithful Shepherds, in the local, on the pastoral team. Faithful Shepherds within the pastoral team. I believe a few of you have some of your team here. How many are here with one of your local team? That's a blessing. How many of you don't have a local team, even at home, that's not here? Is anyone alone in the ministry? Well, we're all blessed. My team minister stayed home so I could come, so I'm blessed in that way. I'd love to have him here as well, but I also know what it's like to be alone on the team, and God gives grace for that, but I don't believe it's his plan. We've been hearing that we need to think collectively. We're a body, and we need others, especially with the gifts. No one has all the gifts, and we need to recognize that. Sometimes we can think we see it very clearly, and then we talk to our co-minister and get the other perspective, and then we need to work at bringing those two together. But before we move into that, I'd like to look at what it says here in 1 Peter 5, where he was giving instruction to feed the flock of God in verse 2, which is among you, and taking the oversight thereof, looking diligently after the well-being of the flock. That's a personal call as well as a collective call to the ministerial team. We are responsible to do that collectively. But then he says, not by constraint. And that means in the original, the Greek, not by force or coercion or unwillingly. And I'd like us each to evaluate how willingly we play our part and how willingly we fulfill our part as a shepherd. He says, not by constraint, but willingly. And I looked that up in the Strong's. The word willingly there's the meaning Strong's gave was with alacrity. And I didn't know what alacrity means. So I had to look that up in the dictionary. I have that written here somewhere. With alacrity. Webster means a prompt response, a cheerful readiness. Not just, not by obligation, but a ready response. And the only way we can come to that is if we're at rest with our calling. And I had to learn that the hard way. And sometimes I talked about becoming cynical. We really need a God focus, which Ephesians is a good study on that. Not focusing on us and other people, but if God is calling me and I have surrendered my life to him, then I am willing. Not because I feel able or capable or experienced. It's not that kind of a willingness. Not a self-confidence, but a God confidence with alacrity. And it is easy, I confess, to lose the joy of ministry when we get focused on ourselves, our inconvenience, our sacrifice, and others' response to that. Even if we're getting feedback of positive praise and appreciation, it's not enough for a selfish heart if that's what we're living on. And early in my ministry, when I was called, I had a vision to go to the mission field and had my sights on going to the foreign mission field, even though we were serving in the local congregation. And I didn't have it in my plans to become a local pastor. But the Lord crossed my will in that when I was called to serve as a local pastor. And it became a cross that confronted me. And at my ordination, I remember this brother that he said, you know, Nathan, you don't need to feel qualified. You don't need to feel like you're the man for the time. He just said, there's one question, and that is, are you willing? And that has helped me a lot over the years. When you come up against a situation, you say, I didn't bargain for this. This is not what I wanted in my life. The flesh rises up, and it just comes back to, are you willing? Are you willing? And then the grace comes, and we find joy and rest. And I don't know if any of you struggle with that, but it's been a key thing that I've gone back to. So this verse here tells us, not by constraint, not by compulsion, not because they laid hands on you or they picked you out, and you can start blaming people for putting you in there. And there's been numerous, maybe an increasing amount of stories, I don't know your settings, but of pastors that just threw in the towel and finished. I don't have strength to go on. I'm depressed. And Brazil, they say there's a growing number of suicides. Pastors just, that's devastating. So, not willingly, but not by constraint, but willingly, comes back to surrender the will. Surrendering to God and what He wants. Lord, if you've called me to this, I need you now more than ever. I am willing, but what's next? And it's amazing the grace and the strength that comes in there, and even the wisdom that God sends, because He gives grace to the humble. So I want to give that for your encouragement. And that will affect your ability to work on a team. Whether it's your struggle is with self-confidence, yeah, I've got the answer to this, or whether you have we need a God confidence so that we can overcome our cynicism and overcome each other's failures. I find maybe even as we come together as a two-man team, we're still not complete and we're not balanced, and we have other ministers we can get input and the brothers to balance it out. But God works through that as we all humble ourselves, and He gives us direction. Not for filthy lucre, it says. We don't practice a salaried minister, so I trust none of us has that as our motivation. But of a ready mind. The idea, again, of alacrity, a willing, prompt response. Neither is being lords over God's heritage, but being ensamples to the flock, or examples. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, ye shall receive a crown of glory that fadeth not away. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Ye all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Casting all your care upon Him, for He careth for you. Very simple principles that we need to do daily. In casting our cares as a minister, we should carry them on our heart, but sometimes they get heavy and we just need to give them to God. Lord, once again, we commit this sheep to you that we just haven't been able to help. And He gives us grace to go on, and we see God working. As we work together as team, I'd like to open it up for how ways you've found to create a team atmosphere. I know some of that comes with time. As you work together, you understand each other's weaknesses and strengths and develop confidence in each other. In that time when I was alone in the ministry, it wasn't by intention or plan. There were a couple lay brethren that were a big help to me, and with time we had ordination, and one of those became my co-minister. And so relationships in the brotherhood or on the team often are developed over time. We see in Scripture the command to have a plural ministry, Acts 14:23. They ordained elders in every church. Sometimes there's a transitional time in the beginning of a new work when there's one or a small amount, but it should be in the working with a larger team. When they had ordained elders in every church and had prayed with fasting, they commended them to the Lord on whom they believed. 2 Timothy 2:1 is another one I was wanting to look at, which is a biblical command. It says, "Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also." So the goal of a team is to help prepare other faithful men. I mentioned we don't go to seminary. We won't send our young men to seminary. I think we need to be intentional about teaching by discipling. I was ordained as a part of an older team, and I learned a lot in the few years I was working with them, even though I was sent out with the new work fairly soon, but they were still a consulting team, and learned a lot just in practice. My co-minister that was ordained for the new work asked me several times, "Well, where did you learn that? How did you think that?" I said, "Well, I learned it by example." And I think there's a lot of things that are caught even more than taught. And it's a beautiful thing when you have a team working together. It's a thing that every congregation deserves to have. It's very difficult for the sheep when there's not clear direction from the pastoral team. And I've known of churches that have gone through very deep waters, but as long as the pastoral team is together, it helps the sheep find their way. So we want to talk about ways to nurture good relationships among the leadership team, and unitedly addressing the dangers in the church. Like I said, we do not have a salaried ministry. I trust there's a supported ministry. I don't know if you have ways of helping ministry with their expenses so that they can have flexible work schedules. I've been blessed with that. I talked some about discipling people, and I've been blessed with most of my time in ministry to be able to take at least one day a week off and dedicate to that type of thing. Maybe not one whole day, but the equivalent of one day in a week to either study for ministry or do visitation. Even when we moved to California, I had to get a day job for a time. And the Lord opened the door, I could work 4 10-hour days. They were long days, but I had 3 days off then, the weekend plus another day. And that was temporary. I enjoy working with brothers, and the Lord opened that opportunity as well. But part of looking out for each other on the team, I believe, maybe we look to the deacons more for the financial care, but we need to make sure that each one is taken care of financially, being able to pay his bills, because that adds a tremendous stress that affects the spiritual side of it very quickly. And along with this is being transparent with our team. Times of sharing financial stress, being open about debt we take on, commitments, so that they can help us make wise choices. Recognize the blessing of working with others, recognizing the need of others. Not just that I need to work with them, but that I need them on the team. Cultivating a team unity. Together we fail or succeed. Being honest with each other without attacking each other. Admonishing as a brother. I believe that's a command in 1 Timothy 5:1. Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as a brother. I've appreciated when there can be an open frankness, where we can tell each other what we feel, what we see, and have that equal coming back to me. It's not balanced when one is frank and the others are all quiet. Can't feel free to be just as frank. I remember sitting in a room with a team where you could just feel the tension, and everybody wanted to have unity, but no one could really share what they were seeing. And we just all need to humble ourselves and recognize, and usually this starts with the lead person. I've had to learn that, just express. I don't have it all together. If you see needs in my life that is hindering us moving forward? Tell me. Please tell me. And that's not easy to say because I don't want to be part of the problem. And I don't want to admit that I want to think I have it all together. I see the needs of others, but maybe my example is causing them to do that. And so it's a blessing when we have brothers that can speak into our lives and say, you know, brother, what you said there, just by the reaction, I think you offended that brother, and can we open it up? And so I've learned at the end of talking about meeting regularly with people, discipling them, I talked about that lady who said, you make me mad every time you say that. I learned to go back and say, you know, did I upset you with anything I said? Because people with hurts can get hurt very easily. And it may be true. And I could say, well, that's true. But I say, why did that hurt? I didn't intend to hurt you. I'm sorry. Can we look at what's behind that? What else is involved there? Otherwise, we never get past that. We just add hurt to hurt. And so my approach can be hindering the progress and the healing that needs to be, even though we may be right in our position. And that's where the team comes in. If we can work together, frankly, recognize we have the gift of mercy, the gift of prophecy. I'm looking forward to that. We're not competing. We need to complement. And where the prophet may be right in what he's seeing, but how are we going to get this person to where they need to be when they already know they're wrong, but they're hurting so bad they're reacting? We need the gift of mercy to go in alongside of them and affirm and work with, not setting aside the gift of prophecy. Because oftentimes you come back to the meeting and say, well, we talked about this and we talked about this, but did you talk about the real issue? Oh no, we need to, next meeting, we need to talk about that. It's working together, and it's not about us. It's about the glory of God, which we heard. We're living to the glory of God. We're dealing with the body of Christ. And one thing that really convicted me a number of years ago is Jesus' words. We said, as much as you've done it to the least of these, my brethren, you've done it to me. And so if I go in there with this judgmental, cut to the chase, would I do that with Jesus? Well, you say, well, Jesus wouldn't have that kind of, he wouldn't have that attitude. Well, but I'm touching his body. And so I need to do this with all care and concern that we're actually doing a surgery that is going to bring healing in the end. Yes, it hurts. We need to deal with hurts. But it needs to bring healing in the end. And that's where we need the gifts to come together. And I mentioned the situation where the brother was totally reacting to a certain approach. And so I totally backed off, and we authorized and appointed another brother to work with him for quite a long number of months until we could come back together, and they were open to it. And I think it was a show for them to realize it was an example of where I was willing to work with the brothers. I wasn't just plowing through with what I saw. And in the end, I think we're getting closer and closer together. I need the brothers to bring that balance. And so we're working together toward the same goal. If we can have that confidence, and I think we need to believe the best about our teammates, sometimes I think the devil plants those doubts. You know what I'm talking about? They can be strong impressions that you can confuse with this Holy Spirit. That revelation. No, he is going against what I said or what I... Go back and ask, you know, brother, this looks a little... What's behind that? Ask questions rather than coming in with their prejudice or prejudgments. But believing the best about our teammates, not taking an accusation from another member or another person, and going directly as if it's true. Believe the best. Talk about it if you need to. Clearly communicate with the person involved. Get the facts. And like I said, sometimes there are failures. and the person is already feeling convicted and condemned, and it's real easy to take care of. God has already been working in their hearts. Other times it was a total miscommunication, misunderstanding, and we can easily resolve that as well. But when you allow suspicions and rumors to take hold, the devil uses that to undermine. So remember, we have an enemy, and he is not our brother. The enemy what does it say there in 1 Peter? We didn't read that, but he's walking about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And I believe he does attack ministers, shepherds, and ministerial teams. If he can take down the team, he has the flock for the most part. So be sober, be vigilant. Be sober means to be free from intoxication. Be careful what books you read. Be careful who you listen to. Be vigilant, looking all about, because your adversary, the devil, is looking for a chance to get in there. Ephesians says, don't give place to the devil. Don't give him a chance to get in there. So honesty, light, walking in the light, the devil flees. Light, transparency, just being open with your team, with each other. Looking at the principles that apply to the situation, coming together on them, and walking in the light. The devil has to flee. I was talking to a family that attends our church, and she comes from a Pentecostal background, and they're always casting out demons. You know, if you see something evil, you cast out the demon. But the problem is he keeps coming back. You got to do it again and again. She said, don't you cast out demons here in this church? And, well, I believe in demon oppression. I've seen it. And maybe more in certain countries and situations. And I think as I observe cultures, wherever there's God's people, the demons are more distant and less active. And I told her, we believe in walking in the light. When we bring light into the situation, the devil moves out. Again, it may be a process, but the more light you let in, the less darkness you have. In this room, we have lights. You might find a few shadows. But the more light there is, the devil has to flee. And there's testimonies to that in cultures where there was a lot of witchcraft. We need more of that. We need more Christians who walk in the light. It's allowing God to change who we are. As we walk in the light, then the demonic influence has to go. How did I get on that? Yes, being vigilant, not allowing the devil a chance into your thoughts. If it's a constant premonition, the brother gave an example there about a lady that had a revelation about the pastor was in an affair. I think that can happen, but we can't. We need to have evidence before we accuse, right? You would agree with that. I know there was a case in Brazil where this woman had a revelation, and she was wrong. And the pastor was accused falsely. So, yeah, that gets into the subject of the gift of revelation. And we can't go, sometimes we have a premonition, a concern. And we talked about the gift of observation, the ministry of diligently looking to the flock. And so we might have a premonition that young girl is troubled. Is she being abused or isn't she? Well, we need to go looking carefully, not with a premonition accused, but as you get close and you discover facts, you put them together, be careful before you lay accusations that there is exactly evidence. In that case, I guess she talked to the lady and she admitted it. Yeah, so it takes wisdom from above. Make sure we are walking in the light. And truth, I believe God reveals through his Spirit. I've seen it happen many times. You say, God, you know, it seems like there's something wrong there. Could you show it to us? And God can cross the paths, the circumstances. We had a couple that was attending regularly, and they'd always show up at church just looking perfect. And one day, in a distant town, going shopping, there they were in a store, and there was a totally different presentation. And so it would have been easy to just kind of skirt around them and not, you know, act like you never saw them, and could have kept going on in that situation. But I felt, you know, God, how likely is this to happen, that we'd cross paths? And so I just went up and said hello. And not accusing of anything, just walking in the light, said hello. And then later, a lot of other things came out. So as we pray, God can bring those things together. And it's not just us, it's other people in church. And we need to ask God for his direction. I think that is a revelation. Pentecostals look for revelation. God showed me in a dream. And the same lady that's Pentecostal said, well, how do you know so much? I said, God has ways of showing us what we need to know. And if we're doing what's right, we don't need to hide, including my own weaknesses, my own failures. I don't need to hide them. Say, yes, I'm sorry, that was a failure, and I recognize it as that. And then there's an easy path forward. So get the clear facts, ask questions to understand before you make a final judgment. Appreciate the balance of others on the team without feeling challenged or insecure. Sometimes, especially when there's two opposing views, we can feel like we need to challenge and stand our ground, whereas when we can blend that, we begin to complement, and together we are stronger. It takes humility to recognize that. It's easy to see the weakness in our brother's position. The gift of mercy, we can say, well, he just never gets to the point. He's just extending mercy and just, where's this going to go? Well, together we can address what needs to be addressed with patience and sanctification even in our own lives. Like they say, no one changes overnight unless there's a real crisis. What is that saying? That unless the pain to remain the same exceeds the pain to change, we will remain the same. Have you ever heard that? That's a human tendency. You know, we don't change unless there's a crisis or there's a pressure or there's a consequence that, you know what, I just got to stop this. I got to change. And we cry out to God. And sometimes it takes a while. Things get worse till there comes that crisis point. We need to let go and let God. Not that we're compromising and embracing that or helping them on that path, but recognizing the individual choice and the free will. I said, I think I get a glimpse into God's heart and how God grieves, and yet he lets us go. Yes, you have a question?
Can I repeat one more time, rather slowly, that same pain change?
Yeah, unless the pain to remain the same exceeds the pain to change, we will remain the same. Is that too fast? Unless the pain to remain the same exceeds the pain to change, we will remain the same. We could give some examples there, but you know, I say selfish people tend to destroy the very thing they want. In a marriage situation, you know, often it's very difficult when you get a couple that is open to counseling, but she wants you to correct her, or she wants you to correct him, and he wants you to correct her. And they're both open for counseling for the other. It's not going to go very far. Until each one recognizes that they need help and they're willing to make the change, because the pain of the difficulty, the fighting, whatever, is exceeding the pain to change. And I'm willing to change. So there are people. We mentioned a couple of psychological terms that I don't like to use, but narcissist and borderline people that have been classified that, and they can be very manipulative and are good at going to one. They serve the gift of mercy in this brother, and so he's their man, and they're going to turn him against the other one on the team that's the prophet. And he's just black and white. They know they're not going to get around him, but we have that even in the brotherhood. Maybe it's not on the pastoral team, but that's where walking in the light on the team, or even calling that person, you know, if you want to talk, we'll hear you together as a team. We want to hear you, but it needs to be on collective so that we can give them a collective answer. God gives discernment. I don't think everyone has intentions to do that, but it does test the ministerial team. And there's a lot of time and energy wasted going back and forth and who said this and who said what. Sometimes it's good, and I think I've tried to do that, especially in controversial situations, even with husband and wife. It's better to have them both there, hear the same thing, tell them the same thing. Otherwise, one goes and says, well, the pastor said this, and then she says, no, but he said this. And then you're worse off than you were. Call the two parties in, say, hey, can we lay this on the table? This is what I understand. One's saying, this is what you're saying. This is some pointers that need to change for both of you. And then if they really want help, that can be helpful. And everybody heard the same thing. Sometimes it's good to have it in writing. Some of these situations can drag out for months and years. And we had a family that was making good progress. And some other situations come up, and suddenly we were sliding backwards, and they said, no, we don't want to be a part of your church. And okay, well, it's voluntary. You're welcome. We're here anytime. But a year went by, and suddenly they, hey, we want to be a part. Well, where did we leave off? And they're like, well, what do we need to do? I said, well, we have something written here, which is where we stopped. And so it gives a background. My co-minister is good at that. Writing everything down is that can be helpful on the team as well. Let's talk about how do we develop camaraderie, doing things besides just discussing church problems. I'd be curious if any of you have something you do on a regular basis as a team to just enjoy time together, visiting, lunch together as couples. Does anyone have something set up on a regular schedule, or maybe some other ideas along that line?
Are you tried? We're all busy. Well, we did some of that about dinner and try to make it a goal not to talk about church. I'm not sure if we've been very faithful in doing it, but we've made some attempts.
Good. At least working toward that. I know it can be hard even to, you know, not talk about anything, because conversation leads to, oh, you know that. So, well, let's talk about that later. We've tried to do that, not necessarily on a regular schedule basis, because, like you said, schedules are busy. But sometimes we need to schedule it, say, well, you know, next week, let's do that. Because church issues do get heavy. And if that's all we do when we get together, we need to have a connection beyond that. And our children do too. We'll talk about family tomorrow, Lord willing. Any other ideas? Yes?
We go to a cabin or an Airbnb once a year. We do that, a couple night getaway, and we don't really discuss church. We play games. And
Now, is that as families or couples?
Couples.
Okay. Good. Yes?
We do something similar, except we do some of the games and fellowship the first night, and then the next day or two, it has varied from a full day to two full days. We focus on some of the long-range goals, and so it is a combination kind of retreat. Mm-hmm. And it's also out of town, so we're not just running back home. social time.
Mm-hmm. And is that once a year?
It's once a year. Mm-hmm. Usually in May.
Very good. I think that's good to share ideas and personal and collective goals, not just coming behind, keeping up with solving problems, but what is our long-term goal? What are we aiming for here? That's helpful. Any other ideas? Someone challenged us recently, what is your church's rallying point? Be something for you to think about. He said every church needs a rallying point, a purpose that they're working toward. For us, maybe our work there in Brazil got started largely around literature with MZL, but it needs to go beyond that. As the literature goes out, we're dealing with people and contacts, and so what is your church's rallying point? If that's not defined, maybe it'd be good to discuss that as a ministerial team, and what are your goals long term? Our goals should be beyond ourselves to building the kingdom. And finally, praying together is important. God, what do you want us to do? Here we are. I've come to that many times when, don't know that I shared that here, when we moved to Brazil, it was almost overwhelming. If we're supposed to reach Brazil of 220 million people, where do you start? And I remember flying in over São Paulo, there are all those skyscrapers. It looks like mountains of rocks, but it's actually skyscrapers for as far as you can see. And just, Lord, how in the world? But the impression that I got, or the answer, was just one soul at a time. And he brings them to us, those that are seeking. We're not there to save the world, but... And it's kind of been a relief, Lord, when, we have all these people we could visit and reach out to, but we need to define our sphere of responsibility. And tomorrow we're going to talk about our families. I was talking to a church that is sending families to a European country, and he said the bishop told him, your first mission field is raise your families. And they're going with some young children. If you just raise your family in that context, you're preparing that many more missionaries. And it's a tremendous witness when you have a united family, a living model. And so defining our sphere of responsibilities, and this is where our team comes in. I was identifying with that thing of a servant, the gift of a servant. Can't say no. Ends up neglecting his own family. But that's where a team can come in and say, you know what, you really need to pay attention to your son or to your family or your wife. And we need to listen to that. No, but so many opportunities. No. If I miss this one, it's going to cripple me. And I was blessed with the full support of our local congregation and my local minister to come here. I figured our schedule's too busy, this wouldn't fit, but God worked that out. And I'm blessed to have that support. I wouldn't want to come without it. So we can cover each other's backs in that way. Sometimes we need to fill in preaching so the other one can fulfill his responsibilities in other places. Maybe someone has a question or suggestion.
How would you encourage us? What are some practical steps to take when we're just not on the same page? Because we want to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about everyone thinking the same, mm-hmm. but we have a common goal. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that differences affects us being able to be united in the big picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, that's sometimes we need to just open our hearts up to our local brothers. and say, this is what I'm feeling, that we're not on the same page, but what is our long-term goal? And it's a blessing if you can do that. This is probably not the same situation, but I did suffer what I would call some panic attacks a number of years ago, and it wasn't because of tension in the ministry, thankfully. And so I am sympathetic to what we talked about this morning of the what seems to be a reality. I wake up with cold sweats just thinking of what could happen, but it wasn't. It felt real. It was almost like a revelation, if I wanted to call it that. But it was, I think it was physical related. I had injured my finger and was taking some strong antibiotics that attributed to that, on top of some other stresses. And the relief to me was, I just called my co-minister and said, this is what I'm up against. It was so real. There was no way I could get myself out of it and convince myself. And if I could, for a short time, it would come back like a wave. With, you know, I believe it was from the evil one. And I'm not one much to be emotional or go by my emotions. And that's what scared me about it. It's like I was emotionally out of control. And he would just listen to me. He said, what are you struggling with? And it was fears of the future and financial debt and things beyond my control. And he said, you know what, Nathan, you just let me handle that. And got some others involved and relieved me of some of the responsibilities until I was able to overcome that. I don't know if that speaks into what you're facing, but if we can at least be honest with our brothers and get on the long-term, establish the same long-term goal. If we can't resolve it internally, I hope most of us have another sister church or some older brothers that we can reach out to and say, what input do you have? We've had to do that.
I'd like to offer this to those of you who have engaged in this and just never felt it came through well, and it's just kind of on the back burner. I can recall two specific moments where the tension was quite strong within the pastoral team, and God gave me grace to give up what I felt deep. It was not a matter of an absolute right, it was a matter of opinion, but I felt deeply about my opinion. The other brother felt maybe more deeply about his. In both times, God gave me grace to just give up. And I didn't push it. And I said, let's let how you feel about it be the major influence on our pastoral team and on the church. And it took a lot of grace because I was afraid of where it would go. But there's something precious about being able to give it to the Lord, not knowing where it's going to go. I didn't always know well, but those two occasions had a powerful influence on me. And I don't know if this is what Peter means when he says, yea, all of you submit yourselves. And in both those occasions, I happened to be in the responsibility of being the senior pastor, the bishop. And I gave it. And I found rest. And in some ways, they were never resolved. But I haven't been troubled. So I would encourage that as being an option when you're in a really tense situation. Usually someone's going to have to give up.
Practical, casting all your cares upon him, for he cares. He's the head of the church. And while we don't want to be careless in our responsibility, God does move and work without us trying to do it for him. Yes?
I think that is wonderful and Christ-like. And I would offer this yet, too, that's kind of, it's not, I think that we should guard our teamwork so that if we've got differences of opinion, we lay it on the table in the team meeting and don't take it outside the team. And when it does get resolved, which may mean somebody's laying down something like was just said, then the not saying that there aren't some times where one would resign and so on. I'm trying to say that, but I am trying to strengthen our commitment that this team is a body and we are open with each other. And if this team can meet together regularly enough that we know each other well enough and a charge comes against another team member, we can stand up for the other brother and say, but I know his heart, or I know what he really believes, or I know what his intentions were, then the church has a lot better chance than if we aren't quite committed for the good of the team and the church. And I liken it to the way that a marriage will survive. If I am approaching my wife contentiously and she's fighting back, we're focused on ourselves, and if we instead take the approach of the relationship is what we're fighting for, it's not to be right, that changes the perspective to be able to look at this relationship is something I want to see thrive and endure, and I don't have to be fighting tooth and nail to be right. Anyway, that's a long story.
Thank you very much.
It's a good principle. I appreciate that. Are we willing to lay down our lives for the good of the church, not insist on my way, giving up? That parallel to the marriage is, I think that's one reason divorce remarriage is so serious before God's eyes, but I've wondered as churches open up or are careless in their commitment to the church, it affects their commitments in general. And divorce remarriage soon comes in. It's something I've pondered on, and that's why as much as possible, if we were called by the church, we fulfill our responsibility, let the church release us. They decide that if it's for the good of the church. I've come to that point and said, if I'm the problem, tell me, and I'm willing to step down. But the church, not that I would say, well, I'm out of here, you solve it. That's a attitude that we'll reap for. We're either part of the problem or part of the solution, and I say we. When we start pointing others are, I have nothing to do, then it isolates it. Any other thoughts or questions? Maybe we'll give the time back to Brother Lee.